Thank you, Blessing, and welcome, Marvelous. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Tuesday, May 3rd, 2016. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Jonga Kandemiri.
And I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Zimbabwe invites bids for the purchase of wild animals, citing a devastating drought and overpopulation.
The issue here is that Zimbabwe, here in Africa, every 4 years we do get dry seasons. But the thing is, they don't...
Children in schools today recited the newly introduced national pledge amid protests from some Zimbabweans.
Zimbabwean journalists cry foul over restrictive media regulations as they commemorate World Freedom Day today.
Generally, I think nothing has changed much. Journalists are still being arrested.
And a Zimbabwean who was abused in Kuwait speaks to Studio 7.
These stories and much more coming up. Stay tuned.
Zimbabwe has invited bids for the purchase of wild animals, citing a devastating drought and overpopulation. According to Reuters news agents, the country wants to destock part of its wildlife, including elephants and lions, following a crippling drought that has resulted in diminished food reserves in some national parks and conservancies. Reuters quotes Caroline Washaya Moyo of the country's National Parks and Wildlife Management as saying that they have not yet identified the number of animals that are said to be sold to various buyers. She could not be drawn to say whether foreign buyers are invited to make bids following an international outcry last year over the killing of a treasured lion, Cecil, by an American doctor. Reacting to this move, John Rodriguez, director of the Zimbabwe Conservation Trust, told Studio 7's Gibbs Dube that the exercise is a result of poor wildlife management.
The issue here is that Zimbabwe, here in Africa, every 4 years we do get dry seasons. But the thing is, they don't look ahead and sort of saying, well, let's put some fodder, cut the grasses, which is in abundance most of the time, and actually store it for periods like this when there's been a drought. So now it's all about greed and money, because there's a lot of countries that need animals. Why aren't they donating those animals to those countries here in Africa? Not in Europe, not in the West, but here. And the thing is, they're trying to make as much money as possible on the wildlife.
Who can buy an animal in Zimbabwe?
No, you don't find many Zimbabweans buying it. I mean, there's ranches, there's people that they've got where they could actually start conservation developments by forming cooperatives and conservancies, and they should actually donate it and leave it here in the country. But I don't think the offer is actually being offered to the Zimbabweans. This is all for the outside so they can get the money in.
What should be done in your own view?
We should actually let nature take its course. You know, these animals belong in Zimbabwe. Why sell them? Why export them? The whole thing is, there's countries here in Africa that have been, they've had conflict. They've got hardly animals. Why not donate it to there? But as you can see, this is not about conservation. This is about the greed and the corruption that actually goes on.
That was Johnny Rodriguez, Zimbabwe Conservation Trust Director, speaking with Studio 7 Skips Dube from Harare.
Children at some primary and secondary schools in Mashonaland West Province today recited Zimbabwe's national pledge for the first time when schools opened for the second term. The national pledge has been criticized as some form of political indoctrination by some Zimbabweans who decided to keep their children at home today in protest. Our correspondent Arthur Chigoriwa reports from Chinoyi.
Our future lies. I salute the nation of flesh. Most parents who witnessed the reciting of the national pledge at the Sinoia Primary School were convinced that the exercise was nothing but state propaganda designed to brainwash children. The pledge will be done when every school term begins. Silas Musangea of Chinoima Pakolo Density Suburb said Zimbabwe has nothing to show the children. The portrayed hard work in the national pledge done to liberate the country from colonial rule.
From what I've seen here at the moment, we're trying to make them patriotic, but do they have the supporting things to do or to show them that, yes, this is what is right for them? Because right now, if we're going to salute the fallen heroes, when at the same time things are not moving very well for the children, they won't appreciate what the fallen heroes have done.
But others, like Mrs. Patience Gororo, who brought her child a gift of a Zimbabwean badge, said the national pledge is good because black people are not privileged to go to school during the colonial era. Mrs. Gororo said the girl child has every reason to celebrate the work done by Zimbabwe's forefathers to liberate the country.
I think us, the whole country, it will help us to acknowledge and to appreciate what our forefathers had done for us. It was a great job what they did for us, and today we are here, we are enjoying their fruits. It's also our fruit. You know, like back then, we're not privileged to go to school, especially as the girl child.
Some of the children loved the pledge. One of them, Billy Petros, who is in grade 6, said he understood the national pledge as a prayer to Zimbabwe's ancestors to bring blessings to the country.
It is a prayer to our ancestors who fought for our country. Yes, we like it a lot because the national pledge make us happy, because the ancestors may bring blessings to us.
Some Zimbabweans who are against the national pledge argue that it violates the rights of children as enshrined in the supreme law of the country. Zimbabwe's Chief Justice Godfrey Chigausiku recently dismissed an urgent chamber application by the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights to stay the reciting of the national pledge in schools until the court makes a ruling on the case. The Constitutional Court will only hear the matter in June.
Almighty God, in whose hands our future lies, I salute the national flag, respecting the...
Reporting for Studio 7 in Chinoi, this is Atach Goriwa.
We are proud inheritors of the richness of our natural resources. We are proud creators and participants in our vibrant traditions and cultures. So I commit to...
In Harare, some school children also recited the national pledge. Our correspondent Ivan Chifera visited some of the schools and filed this report.
Those are pupils at one government primary school in Harare reciting the national pledge today. The national pledge was officially launched despite strong resistance from some parents and religious organizations. At schools visited by Studio 7, pupils assembled and sang the national anthem, then recited the Lord's Prayer, and then the national pledge. Surprisingly, the pupils recited the pledge so well, and at one of the schools, the few parents who turned up to witness the launch clapped hands and seemed to like it. Others even brought presents for their children, as had been directed by the school heads. Some parents, like Gift Wesa, said he was disappointed by the launch of the march.
As a parent, I'm very much disappointed by these impositions by government, especially the ZANU-PF administration, to force our children to recite these things which they call national pledges, because we think by so doing they are parroting the regime. We have a lot of things which are imminent, which needs to be addressed by the government. Teachers are not getting their salaries in time. We also have the dilapidation of the education system. So these are things which the government should concentrate on rather than imposing these things which are shallow to our children.
The Constitutional Court is due to hear the matter on June 3, in which a Harare man is challenging the constitutionality of the government policy directing school pupils to recite the National Pledge. The National Pledge reads as follows: Almighty God, in whose hands our future lies, I salute the national flag, respecting the brave fathers and mothers who lost lives in the Chimurenga Umvukela. We are proud inheritors of the richness of our natural resources. We are proud creators and participants in our vibrant traditions and cultures. So I commit to honest and the dignity of hard work. Close quote. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
In a related development, there was relative tranquility in schools today after restless teachers started receiving pay slips, reflecting the much-awaited 2015 bonuses. Three teachers' organizations confirmed to Studio 7 that their members started receiving the pay slips today. Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe and the Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe had both warned that their members were not going to conduct classes starting today if the government failed to pay them their outstanding bonuses. Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe coordinator Brighton Makunike tells Studio 7 that most teachers were, however, disappointed when they failed to access the money from their banks as most banks ran out of cash.
It was a slow start of the second term, and the SNAP survey by the Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe has revealed that most boarding schools had a low turnout of less than 30% on this opening day.
What about the issue of bonuses? Teachers were threatening not to return to their workstations.
It is indeed true, Mkoma Jonga, that the teachers have taken the heed of RTUZ, which made a resolution to call for boycott of classrooms until the bonuses have reflected. And nothing has changed with regards to that position.
But we understand that your members have received their pay slips reflecting the bonuses.
That's the challenge that we have got since the time immemorial, because the money that is reflecting on the pay slip has got its only value when that particular money is really reflecting in your bank account. And at the moment, the majority of our members, yes, they have received the pay slips with the bonuses reflecting, but they are still yet to see the money is reflecting in their bank account.
That was Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe coordinator Brighton Makunike in Harare.
Years after the adoption of the much-touted so-called progressive constitution that embraces media freedom and access to information, journalists and media practitioners in Zimbabwe say the operating environment has not improved, as some of them are at times arrested and intimidated by the state. Our correspondent Patricia Mudadigwa reports.
Zimbabwe joined the rest of the world today in commemorating World Press Freedom Day amid concerns that the government has not scrapped media laws like the Access to Information and Protection of Privacy Act, or AIPA, Public Order and Security Act, and the Broadcasting Services Act, which are widely viewed as impeding media freedom in the country. Independent journalist Pindai Dube said, journalists continue to operate while fearing for their lives.
Generally, I think nothing has changed much because journalists are still being arrested. Recently, we saw the arrest of Newsday journalist, the arrest of Sunday Mail journalist. This government I can call it a paper tiger because they are not implementing what they say. Because recently, we saw the High Court quashed the criminal defamation. And also, some government officials are condemning AIPA and POSA, but nothing practical has been done.
Another journalist, Everson Mushava, said there have been very few achievements in terms of media freedom in Zimbabwe, which he, however, noted were overshadowed by the repressive operating environment. Mushava said the recent threats by the government to clamp down on social media has even added to the fear that Zimbabwe is not genuine in ensuring that it embraces freedom of expression and freedom of the media.
There's been one big achievement, which is the striking off of criminal defamation laws by the Constitutional Court, but the operating environment largely remains the same. Worse still, with the President Mugabe threatening again to clamp down on the social media.
Taban Moyo, Advocates Officer of the Media Institute of Southern Africa, or MISA Zimbabwe, said the media laws in the country hinder the enjoyment of media freedom and access to information.
I think the major challenges have been to do with our laws. We have got a progressive bill of rights, but the supporting pieces of legislation are speaking to the contrary. So our main challenge has been that while the Constitution is promoting the right of a free press, right of access to information and media freedom, there is a crippling effect which is being brought by the laws.
Moyo said besides the crippling media laws, the industry's viability is also threatened.
Our main challenges then spill into the issues to do with media viability itself. Many of these newspapers are folding, and those that got licenses, some failed to take off. And within that same sphere, you also realize that others are operating on shoestring margins. We also face the challenge of digital migration. We are not yet ready in terms of creating a content generating industry.
Barnabas Totlana, Secretary General of the Editors Forum, added that today's World Press Freedom Day commemoration serves as a reminder of some of the issues that have not yet been done in Zimbabwe.
Media laws and policy reform, particularly IPA and the Broadcasting Services Act, is pronounced looking at what the permanent secretary in the ministry said recently about community radio stations, the issue of sustainability of the media industry, especially newspapers, transparency on the digitalization program and policy, professionalism and ethics, and the safety of journalists. Those are issues of concern to us.
Foster Dongos of the Zimbabwe Union of Journalists said the arrest of Zimpaper's journalist late last year could be a warning sign that things would be tough in Zimbabwe.
One of the things that should frighten us and make us very afraid is the fact that, and we've pointed that out earlier, that when the establishment starts arresting journalists from the public media, then it means journalists in Zimbabwe have to be afraid.
According to Mr. Zimbabwe, at least 25 journalists have either been arrested or intimidated by the state in the last 16 months. This year's World Press Freedom Day celebrations in the country are being held under the theme Access to Information and Fundamental Freedoms. This is your right. The localized theme is Media Sustainability in the Digital Age. An annual report released Wednesday by the independent Washington-based watchdog organization, Freedom House, gave Zimbabwe a cautious upgrade from a not free to a partly free status for some slight improvements in 2015. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Patricia Mdadigwa.
Coming up,
Zimbabwe is planning to introduce new laws to relax the business regulations.
We will talk to one of the women who returned from Kuwait.
They promised to give us jobs and they give us a few months to go back home.
Stay tuned.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
Voters in the Midwestern U.S. state of Indiana are headed to the polls today in a crucial Republican presidential primary, where front-runner Donald Trump faces a showdown with his closest rival, Texas Senator Ted Cruz. A Trump victory in Indiana would likely put the billionaire real estate mogul on a glide path to clinching the Republican Party's presidential nomination before its July National Convention in Cleveland.
And a U.S. Navy SEAL has been killed by enemy fire during an Islamic State attack on a Kurdish Peshmerga position in northern Iraq, a defense official told VOA.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
The Zimbabwe Investment Authority, or ZIA, says the government's plans to promulgate 13 laws to improve the ease of doing business by June is informed by World Bank reports. The chief secretary in the office of the president and cabinet, Dr. Meshack Sibanda, speaking at a cocktail organized by his office at the Zimbabwe International Trade Fair in Bulawayo, said the legislative reforms would include a public procurement bill. In 2015, the World Bank ranked Zimbabwe number 153 out of 189 countries, and this year Zimbabwe is ranked number 155. Economies are ranked on their ease of doing business from 1 to 189. A high ease of doing business ranking means the regulatory environment is more conducive to the starting and operation of a local firm. The number one ranked country in the world is Singapore, and in Africa it is Rwanda. Some economists have blamed Zimbabwe's indigenization law for scaring investors. The law requires foreign companies with assets of more than 500,000 to transfer or sell a 51% stake to indigenous Zimbabweans. Harare says the indigenization law is meant to correct colonial imbalances which marginalized black Zimbabweans. But analysts say that policy and others have sunk Zimbabwe's economy to unprecedented lows. Chief Executive Officer of ZIA, Richard Mbaiwa, tells VOA Studio 7 reporter Blessing Zulu that the reforms are significant in attracting investment.
This is very significant. It's part of the reform process for doing business in the country. And as investment promotion agents, we believe that this will go a long way in improving the environment for doing business in the country and also our ability to attract foreign direct investment, as well as make conditions for local entrepreneurs conducive for investment. As you know, this process is informed by the rankings that are done specifically by the World Bank. They are doing business report. So we are looking at the indicators that the World Bank looks at and then addressing each and everyone to see how the rankings can be improved and the overall doing business environment improved for a conducive investment environment.
As the Zimbabwe Investment Authority, how involved are you in this process?
Well, we are part of the whole process. The process is being done by way of various technical working groups which look at the various indicators and addressing them and seeing which areas need to be reformed by way of a legislative review, by way of reviewing the processes, the procedures, the cost of doing business and all those things. So as Zimbabwe Investment Authority, we are part of the overall framework in terms of participation in the various technical working groups which looks at the specific indicators that are being reviewed.
And are you seeing any interest in investing in Zimbabwe?
Of course, if we look at the projects that are submitted to us for approval, yes, we are seeing a lot of interest in investing in the country. I think in terms of submissions of projects, but we are yet to look at the, for example, a project that we approved last year. We'll need to do some exercise to look at the implementation. But in terms of interest as shown by project proposals that have been submitted, we are seeing a lot of interest. Last year alone, we approved projects worth over $3 billion. So we think that is quite significant.
Lastly, there is a concern about policy inconsistencies when it comes to Zimbabwe. Are these some of the issues that you are addressing?
I think the issues that are being addressed, like I said, to do with reviewing and reforming the overall climate for doing business in terms of the procedures, in terms of the processes, the time frames, in terms of how long it would take for someone to do their business or to establish a business in the country, and overall the cost involved in doing business in the country.
Is this also bringing clarity to the issue of indigenization, which we understand has caused anxiety amongst investors?
I think the latest issue on indigenization and the economic policy clarity was issued. There was a statement issued by His Excellency the President on the 11th of April 2016. It is the statement which gives the overall clarification on indigenization and economic empowerment, and I don't think there's further clarity that one can make after that statement.
That was Chief Executive Officer of the Zimbabwe Investment Authority, Richard Mbaiwa, on the line from Harare with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu.
One of the 32 women and girls who were repatriated back to Harare from Kuwait over the weekend says that she received a warm welcome from her family and community and is now exploring ways of making a living. Liamari Mira says the first meal she ate when she got home was sadza and fresh greens. She says she's also happy with the reception she and other girls received from the government, doctors and counselors that welcomed them Saturday. Marimira is one of the first girls to break the silence after arriving home Saturday. She is glad to be safe at home.
They welcomed us in a nice way, and they take us at Dombo Shower, and we have a good time together, and they interview us, and we have a medical.
And then from there, what happened?
They promised to give us jobs. And they give us money to go back home. And my family, they were so happy.
What was the first meal that you ate when you got home?
Sadza and vegetables. I miss it very well.
And what's your advice to some young women and girls that may also get the same job offer that you got to go and work in Kuwait or any other Arab countries?
It's not good to be a foreign land. Foreign land is not easy.
That was Leah Maramira, one of the young girls that were trafficked to Kuwait and are now back in Zimbabwe, speaking with Studio 7.
Amnesty International Group 168 in Charleston, South Carolina, in the United States of America, has organized a protest in solidarity with abducted human rights activist Itai Dzamara and his brother Patterson Dzamara, who was recently brutally assaulted by the Zimbabwe state security agents. State security agents punched and beat Patterson Dzamara with batons and later forced him to drink about 4 liters of water after he staged a peaceful demonstration at an Independence Day event attended by President Robert Mugabe on 18 April at Harare's National Sports Stadium. Patterson Dzamara held up a placard reading, quote, "Independent but not free, where is my brother Itai?" And he was standing near a VIP tent when up to 10 security agents set up on him. Itai Dzamara disappeared in March last year after he was bundled into a car by 5 unidentified men in Glenview, Harare. He has not been seen since. Patterson tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that he is humbled by this solidarity shown by the people of Charleston.
It's really encouraging to have other people whom I do not even know standing with me in the fight for justice. And I'll say that it's something most of our people, I'm saying to Zimbabwe, it's something they have to dream from and learn from. Because an injury to one is certainly an injury to all.
And it's almost a year since the disappearance of Itai. Are you happy at all with the conduct of the police, how they are investigating this matter?
I'm not at all happy. I've always reiterated my position regarding their lack of, number one, professionalism, and also, what I would say, honesty in discharging their duties regarding this matter.
That was Patterson Dzamara, brother of abducted human rights activist Itai Dzamara, speaking on the line from Harare with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. Our host of The Connection, Ntungamili Nkomo Ntatenda Gumbo, will be talking with listeners and experts about the opening of schools and the second term with children reciting the National Pledge.
And now to recap today's top stories.
Zimbabwe invites bids for the purchase of wild animals, citing a devastating drought and overpopulation.
Children in schools today recited the newly introduced National Pledge amid protests from some Zimbabweans.
And Zimbabwean journalists cry foul over restrictive media regulations as they commemorate World Press Freedom Day.
That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Tebele. This is Jonga Kandemiri.
And I'm Marvelous Mtlanga Nyahuye, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night.